If I hadn't done that, then I would have done
this before.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Any time.
Good evening.
Okay.
It being 5:30, we'll commence. My name's Christian Street. I'm the acting mayor of Kingborough, and it's my pleasure to welcome you all to tonight's council meeting on Monday, the 17th of August, 2026. And welcome to those in the public gallery this evening. Could you please make sure your mobile phones are turned to silent? It's 5:30 p.m. and I now officially declare this meeting open. Council now operates under the Local Government Meeting Procedures Regulations 2025, and under those regulations I'm required to advise you that an audio or video visual recording is being made of the meeting. All persons attending the meeting are to be respectful of and considerate towards other persons attending the meeting, and language and conduct at the meeting that could be perceived as offensive, defamatory or threatening to a person attending the meeting or listening to the recording is not acceptable. The audio recording of council meetings is made publicly available on our website and meetings are live streamed on YouTube. I will now ask staff to confirm that the audio recording has commenced. Thank you. I wish to acknowledge the traditional custodians of this land, pay my respects to elders past and present, and acknowledge today's Tasmanian Aboriginal community. Attendees this evening, myself, Acting Mayor Councillor Street, Councillor Antoli, Councillor Bain, Councillor Cordova, Councillor Dean, Councillor Fox and Councillor Midgley. From our staff, our Chief Executive Officer, Mr Dave Stewart, our Director of People and Finance, Mr David Spinks, our Director of Governance, Recreation and Property Services, Mr Daniel Smee, our Director of Engineering Services, Mr Craig Mackey, our Director of Environment Development and Community Services, Mrs Delia Shakuti, our Coordinator of Statutory Planning, Mrs Melissa Stevenson, our Executive Officer, Ms Sarah Vella, our Communications Lead, Ms Sam Adams, our Communications Officer, Mr Stuart Heather, and our Executive Assistant, Mrs Amanda Morton. We have an apology this evening from Councillor Richardson. Can I have a mover, please, that the minutes of the open session of Council Meeting number 14 held on 3 August 2026 be confirmed as a true record. Mover and Councillor Fox, seconded Councillor Bain. All those in favour, please say aye. To the contrary, no. That is carried unanimously. Workshops held since the last council meeting on the 10th of August, council held a workshop titled Planning Review and Annual Plan. Moving to declarations of interest, does any councillor have an interest they would like to declare? No. Transfer of agenda items, is there any item on the agenda that a councillor would like to transfer from open into closed session or closed into open session? No. Questions without notice from the public. Does any member of the public wish to ask a question without notice? No. Questions on notice from the public. There were three in this agenda, one on Bruny Island SAP from Mr Gary Lysel and an officer's response, a question on CCTV at the Commonwealth Bank Kingston bus stop from Mr Will Perry, and a question on bushfire management plans from Ms Kim Phillips. Moving to questions without notice from councillors, does any councillor wish to ask a question without notice? Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. My first question regards H5N1 bird flu. What special measures is Kingborough taking to prepare for or mitigate the ongoing consequence damage of bird flu on wildlife and poultry farmers in our municipality? Are there any messages we should convey to the community at this stage, and how are those messages being disseminated?
Mr Stewart.
Thanks for the question, and obviously I can understand the concern that people in our community may have about avian flu. At this stage, Council's role is to follow the direction of the state government, and this is the lead agency in addressing this biosecurity risk. Council's role may evolve over time, but we will take guidance from the state government around what role we will play and at what stage they activate us. In terms of communications, likewise, our role is really sharing information and messaging from the state government. So I'd encourage people to follow direction received from the state government. But in the short term, if people see a dead bird or animal, encourage them not to touch it and to recall the biosecurity hotline.
Councillor Cordova.
Thank you.
Through you, Acting Mayor, the next questions relate to Bruny Island. The first one regards pedestrian safety, the perception that road speed signs aren't, I guess, aren't being enforced or aren't being adhered to by visitors and perhaps residents, not sure. My question was, what are the road safety measures that Kingborough Council's actively involved in establishing for areas designated to be high risk? There are a number of potential remedies or traffic calming measures that were suggested by residents at a recent community meeting, but I just wondered whether there was, for example, has there been efficacy established around those? So if you've got a speed sign that somebody's not following, are things like those happy face radar activated signs, smiley face for you're doing the speed limit and frowny face for you're not doing the speed limit, like have we established if there's efficacy in those kind of measures? And has that been trialled on Bruny specifically?
Mr. Stewart?
Thank you. First point, I'll just note that Council isn't the agency primarily involved in, I guess, enforcing speed limits. In saying that, I'll take the rest of the question on notice to be able to try and get you a more detailed response.
Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. And pardon my extremely technical terminology there regarding happy-faced radar-activated signs.
Everybody knew what you were talking about.
My next question for Bruny Island, or relating to Bruny Island, is with respect to water security. Constituents on Bruny Island have raised the concern, again, the perception of water insecurity as a result of excess usage by particularly short-stay accommodation. But there were other issues raised around commercial use of water and the like. So my question really is around Bruny Island water security plan. Is there such a master plan or a plan in place for water security on Bruny? Does that plan include monitoring and investigation of, I guess, the extent of water use by those groups like short-stay accommodation or commercial and that kind of thing?
I suspect you're about to get a very similar answer to this question, but Mr. Stewart.
It is quite a similar answer. I'll note that water is the remit of TAS Water, not of Council. We're aware, and TAS Water kept us abreast of the situation when they closed the aquifer for access, and they were carting water across the ferry onto the island. However, I'll need to seek guidance from TAS Water about any further planning that they've got in place.
Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, that's all. Thank you.
Are there any further questions without notice? Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. I have received a number of questions from the community about caretaker provisions for this council. I understand there is no such thing in the Act, but we do have a policy that covers it for us. I'm wondering if the CEO or someone could help the community understand what that means for Kingborough, how does it apply, and what are the date ranges it applies to, please?
Mr. Stewart.
Thank you. You're correct. There's not a requirement under the Act at this stage, although it is one of the changes to the Act that is being contemplated by the state government for future legislative reform. I'll note that there are a number of councils across the state that do have caretaker policies, though, noting that Kingborough Council was the first to put ours in place. In terms of the context of the caretaker policy, I'll note that Council adopted that one or two meetings ago, or updated it one or two meetings ago, but essentially it means that Council can't make some decisions that may bind a future Council. So that's very large capital allocation or decision making on tenders. It includes not making provisions to change the planning scheme. It includes not hiring or firing the CEO. It also
policies.
Oh yes, and policies. So Council can't adopt policies during that time. In terms of the time frame, it comes into effect on the date that the TEC opened the electoral period, which I believe off the top of my head is the 5th of September, and goes through until the final announcement of the electoral result.
Councillor Antoli.
Thank you. Great, helpful answer. If council makes a decision today that could enjoin on council during the caretaker period a trigger for one of those issues, does that mean that decision cannot be made today and has to be deferred? An example would be a motion that would require a change to the budget and reallocation of staff to suit that motion.
Mr. Stewart?
Thanks for the sort of explanation there. So council is not limited in the decisions that it can make tonight. However, if it meant that further consideration would be required through a decision at a future council meeting that would be in caretaker, that would need to be deferred until and after the caretaker period.
Thank you. Are there any further questions without notice? Councillor Dean.
Thank you, Mayor, and apologies, I completely forgot to send this one through. It's just a friendly follow-up. To the Kingborough Lions, who recently participated in the FFA Cup, went down valiantly, and prior to that game occurring, I was just wondering whether, given the success in winning the statewide cup that got them to the FFA Cup, whether there was an opportunity for us to recognise that achievement for the club as something here at council, and whether we've had the opportunity to speak with the president or the committee about doing something for the Lions.
I don't believe we have, but we certainly can. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. That just prompted me. Can I please ask a question and acknowledge Council's work in regards to that event as well? I'd just like to ask a question about that. I'm trying to frame it into a question. It's a positive news story. If you indulge me, can I...
Did we assist? Is that the question?
What I would like to actually state from that is that I'd really like to acknowledge how Council really stepped up for our local community club for an amazing event. I was there on the Saturday volunteering and saw a number of staff there working. The grounds looked absolutely superb. And I just want to give a big shout out to the team, really, for supporting such a great, successful community event.
Mr. Smee, were those things that our team participated in?
Thank you, Acting Mayor. They were indeed. Council provided support in the way of capital upgrades to the grandstand and the seating, so to ensure that the ground could meet its capacity requirements safely. Our turf crew did a power of work in relation to the preparation of the ground to ensure it was presented in the best possible condition, and then there was a lot of work behind the scenes in relation to the required permits through our environmental health and building departments to meet various legislative requirements that were required in relation to place of assembly, licensing, etc. So, yes, a significant achievement from both the club and with support from council to ensure that event was a success.
You hear. Any further questions without notice? There being no further questions without notice, questions on notice from councillors. There were four. Roadkill prevention from Councillor Cordova, nest boxes from Councillor Cordova, feral deer management from Councillor Cordova, and a budgetary question from Councillor Midgley, the responses for which are printed in the agenda. With that, the open session adjourns and the Planning Authority commences at 5:44 p.m. Moving to item 12.1, PSA 2026-2, proposed amendment to the Kingborough Interim Planning Scheme 2015, rezoning at 27 Selby Road, Kettering. Do I have a mover for the recommended motion printed on page 16, please? Moved, Councillor Bain, and seconded, Councillor Fox. Councillor Bain.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. So this proposal seeks to rezone the site at 27 Selby Road, Kettering, from rural living zone to the low-density residential zone. It's important to note that this is only the first step in that process, which is advertising this amendment and inviting feedback from the public. The report tells us that this lot is situated within a low-density residential area with single dwellings on large allotments. It ticks all the boxes in relation to making use of existing infrastructure services and reasonable infill development within an existing residential area. So on that basis, I'm happy to support the recommendation.
Thank you, Councillor Bain. Are there any further contributions? No?
Councillor Bain, do you wish to sum up? No? I'll put the motion. It's the recommended motion on page 16. It's moved by Councillor Fox and seconded... Sorry, moved by Councillor Bain and seconded by Councillor Fox. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
To the contrary, no. That is carried unanimously. Moving to item 12.2, which is DAS 2026-4, S43A development application for subdivision creating three lots associated with Planning Scheme Amendment PSA 2026-2. Before I call for a mover for this motion, it's been indicated to me prior to the meeting that there is a condition missing which is mentioned in the report but not contained in the conditions. I'm just going to ask for some further qualified advice from Ms. Stevenson with respect to that condition, please.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. If you look at the attachment to the report, which is the assessment checklist, under the bushfire prone areas code, there is a clause E 1.6.3, which is on page 41 of the agenda, starts at the very bottom of that page and goes over to page 42. There's a requirement for, because the site is within a bushfire prone area, and there's a requirement for a bushfire report to be done in relation to the subdivision. That report identifies that the existing water supply for the existing dwelling on lot one is not compliant with the bushfire requirements and is required to be upgraded. The assessment checklist identifies that a condition needs to be included in the permit to require that upgrade to occur prior to the sealing of the final plan. Unfortunately, that condition was missed from the list of conditions in the recommendation. So the recommendation should have included a condition, and I do have some previously prepared words on the screen for you, to have a condition that says, prior to the sealing of the final plan of survey, a compliant water supply must be provided to Lot 1 in accordance with the submitted bushfire hazard report and accompanying subdivision bushfire hazard management plan. So if anyone has any questions about that, obviously let me know. Otherwise, if that could be included, that would be appreciated, and apologies for the error. Thank you.
What I intend to do in the circumstances is call for a mover of the motion with the addition of that condition as condition 13. Is there a mover for such a motion? Moved in Councillor Cordover and seconded in Councillor Bain. Councillor Cordover.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. Look, I'll take all this as read. I guess the centre of my analysis was around on this particular site, I was considering edge effect specifically. Oh, did you want me to speak to the motion now, or just to this amendment?
Well, it's not an amendment because what you've just done is moved the motion with the addition of that condition.
Yeah, well, that's right. So now I'm just giving my
speak to the motion.
Yeah, sure thing. Look, I've thought about this. I've looked at the recommendation from council officers, and also by spending some time with some aerial photography, you can actually see the... What I'm concerned around when it comes to habitat fragmentation and things like that is those edge effects. And so the basic concept here is that when you do remove native vegetation, for example, that can... imagine you've got a large area of native vegetation and then you clear some small amount of that native vegetation. What that does is it moves the edge of where that vegetation is, which has impacts on wildlife and fragmentation of habitat and the like. So you actually have these cumulative effects, and I often talk about this kind of death by a thousand cuts. With respect to this particular site, those edge effects, I believe, are non-consequential as the site is already heavily disturbed, the land clearing has already occurred, and we can talk about, you know, for better or worse, is that the right area for, you know, urban sprawl and this and that, but the decision was actually made, you know, long, long ago, in fact, that this area and the existing land use pattern, or the existing development in that area, is not dissimilar from what this specific proposal appears to be indicating. So for me, you know, I looked at what those combined effects are of houses and driveways and gardens and bushfire hazard management and the like, and the impact on, I guess, further development in that area. And from my perspective, those edge effects are essentially are non-consequential on this specific site, and therefore I'm comfortable with approving it. Thanks.
Thank you. Are there any further speakers on this motion? Councillor Antolli.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. I do have a question about condition number 9. which is on what page is that? 36, I think. And the issue is that Condition 9 requires underground power to, quote, both lots. Is that correct, given that it's a three-lot subdivision, or is that an error, or I got it wrong?
Ms. Stevenson.
Through you, Acting Mayor. It should actually be to all lots, noting that the existing, because one of the lots is currently developed, there would obviously already be power to that lot, but it should refer, so it would be both new lots effectively, or all lots would probably be better, yeah.
Can I ask a question first, Councillor Andrew?
I would love you to.
Ms. Stevenson, does the already developed proposed lot have underground power already?
I'm not 100% sure of that. Off the top of my head, I'm sorry. Just bear with me a moment. I'll just have a quick look at the plan to see if it shows power on there or not.
The reason I asked the question is to know whether we need to amend to say both new lots or all lots.
Yeah, it does show on there. So if you look on the subdivision plan, which is on page 63, there is a pointing to a power turret down near the front boundary of lot 2. So there may be an existing power turret there, which suggests maybe that the power is underground. Just have a quick look on the aerial imagery and see if I can see. Yeah, I can't tell. I think to be safe, it probably would be better just to say all lots, and then if the existing lot has the underground power, then there won't be any need for anything additional. Otherwise, they would need to provide it to the lots proper of the other two lots. So lot 2 would be fairly straightforward because it's already adjoining the road. It's lot 3 being the internal lot that would need the extended up further up the driveway.
Ms. Stevenson, if I were to call for a mover for an amendment to Condition 9 to remove the words to both, and substitute the word all, will that be sufficient?
Yes.
Do I have a mover for that amendment? Thank you, Councillor Rantoli. Seconded in Councillor Fox. Councillor Rantoli, do you wish to speak to the amendment?
No, I might have all questions, but I
don't. We'll deal with this first. And are there any further speakers? Councillor Fox?
I have a question that relates to the water situation that's already been mentioned.
This is in relation to the... Actually, I have missed a step here. Is the amendment satisfactory to the mover and seconder being Councillor Cordova and Councillor Bain? Okay. Then the amendment becomes part of the substantive motion and I will come back to you, Councillor Antoli.
As I said, I have nothing to add, and I might have a few questions later, but I am in support.
Okay, all right. Councillor Fox.
I guess I'm a bit concerned about the fact that the existing house has got a water supply that isn't appropriate, and I'm wondering whether, in fact, what the water supply to the other houses would be. I don't think there's any reticulated water in Kettering, and therefore I presume they're relying on roof water or spring water. And if the original house has got inadequate water supply, would there be a problem for the other two houses in the same situation?
Ms. Stevenson.
Through you, Acting Mayor. So the existing water supply is satisfactory for the house, but it doesn't meet the standards for firefighting. So there would be a normal water supply for servicing the house, but they have to have a separate supply of a minimum of 10,000 litres, I think usually it is, and it has to meet certain requirements to meet the current Australian standard for bushfire. And so the current water tank that they have that services the dwelling doesn't also meet the criteria for the firefighting, so they would just have to have a separate supply for firefighting, so it has to be separated from the usual house water supply. So, there are criteria in the standards that that talk about what it has to be and where it has to be located. So it has to be able to be accessed by the fire trucks. It has to be within a certain distance of the house and so forth. So on, I don't know if it's actually shown on the subdivision plan. It is not shown on the bushfire plan, so it's not identified in the bushfire plan as being a problem to be able to be provided. It just needs to be done as a separate supply.
Are there any further contributions? Councillor Antoli.
Yes, I have a question, and I thank Councillor Fox for bringing up her question because it jogged my memory. So TAS Networks was referred on the 20th of March, and as I understand it, they hadn't responded when the report was completed. So this was 5 months ago? And back to my favourite condition number 9 that I brought up before, is condition 9 workable with the change we've just made if TAS Networks imposes a requirement the layout cannot accommodate? What happens in a situation like that? Because we don't know what their response is according to the paperwork here.
Ms. Stevens.
Through you, Acting Mayor. The requirements for the referral to TAS Networks are set out in the legislation, and we've done that. Where they don't respond to council, it is assumed that they have no objections to the application. So I would say it'd be unlikely there would be an issue.
The snook of the poor resident with our decision today. That's great. That's all from me.
Thank you. Are there any further contributions? There being none, Councillor Cordova to Summer.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. Briefly, just to say, I think it's been a robust discussion, and I'm pleased we're able to accommodate those appropriate amendments and fixes there. Look, as we talked about at the beginning, there are, you know, oftentimes appropriate places and spaces for subdivision, and this is just one of those, and so I'm very pleased to have been able to move for this particular subdivision. Thanks.
Thank you. The motion is as put by Councillor Cordova and seconded by Councillor Bain. It's the amended motion that was originally printed on page 34 of the agenda. All those in favour, please say aye. To the contrary, no. That's carried unanimously. With that, the Planning Authority adjourns and open session recommences at 5:57 p.m. Moving on to petitions still being actioned. There are no petitions still being actioned. Petitions received in the last period. At the time the agenda was compiled, no petitions had been received. Moving on to officers' reports to Council and item 15.1, the Annual Plan 2026-27. And the recommended motion on page 66. Do I have a mover, please, for that motion? Moved Councillor Midgley and seconded Councillor Cordova. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you. Thank you, Acting Mayor. First, we'd like to acknowledge the staff for the work on this. It's a big document. Takes a lot of time to pull a number of things together and get the wording correct. So I just want to acknowledge and thanks for that. And also the councillor briefing last Monday night for a bit of input and a few little tweaks. But all councils do an annual plan, and our annual plan provides a focused snapshot of council's key priorities, actions and projects for 2026-27, and it aligns with our strategic plan 2025-2035. And our annual plan provides a clear and useful overview of council, what council does, what it's prioritising, and how it's allocating its budgets and resources. And it brings together the priorities and planned activities and also the useful financial information in one document that the community can really see a transparency there around where the money is being invested and the services and projects that council is delivering. And also it demonstrates this year we've got like a new addition around the council service catalogue, so we can really see that breadth of council's responsibilities. It's so much more than roads, rates and rubbish. It's infrastructure and planning and environment, community development, recreation, customer service and organisational services. We do so much sometimes with really not a massive budget. So thanks to everyone doing that work. But a couple of highlights, and I really think there's some things that have been raised recently by community in the annual plan. The elements of community engagement. Council's really looking to improve how we engage with residents, including better digital engagement and customer experience. The community development, the progress on the community development strategy, bringing all of our community inclusion and work in that area into one strategy, which will make it meaningful, and also that staff can just have one document that they can action against as well. Also leaning into advocacy, how we're going to advocate on issues around housing and broader community needs, so naming that up as a key responsibility. Environment and sustainability, there's actions around climate, waste, biodiversity, bushfire resilience and sustainable council operations, which are a key part of council operations. The fact that we are in a climate biodiversity emergency, it's really important we invest in these areas. But also a key highlight of our budget this year was the organisational improvement as well. So improving our systems, our customer experience, our digital services and council's ability to measure performance. So they're just a few highlights that I got from the annual plan. And one thing that I didn't actually ask around at the council workshop was, and I've heard the CEO talk about this a little bit and his vision in that area, was the commencement of a long-term vision for Kingborough. And that particularly caught my eye when I read over that again. So I'm wondering if we can hear from that acting mayor around what does this actually mean, and is there a proposed budget or cost associated with that vision as well?
Mr. Stewart.
Thanks for the question. And yes, this is something we have talked about and something that I'm really keen to get into once we have a newly elected council in the door. Essentially what that is intended to be is sort of a long-term, I guess, community vision for our community, not necessarily a plan for council per se, but a sort of a view of what Kingborough can be into the future, whether that be sort of 20, 30, 40 years into the future. So sort of a guiding light that can help shape what council's role is through future strategic plan iterations, but also to guide our collective advocacy into other layers of government about what we see the future of Kingborough being. So it is a conversation that I'm really keen to have with the council post end of October. At this stage, there isn't a dedicated budget line associated with it. I see the first 6 months of the council being sort of that forming a view and beginning to begin the process internally and before it turns and faces with the cost element into the new financial year.
Councillor Midgley.
Thank you. Thanks so much. I'll be looking out for that one. And wondering in regards to like how we report on the annual plan and the progress on the actions that have been named, and I know that we have like a traffic light system sort of methodology that we've reported on before that I've often gone, oh, can we get something a bit different around that? Like what's the kind of vision and how are we looking at that differently in regards to how we're going to report against these actions?
Mr. Stewart.
Yeah, thank you. We're doing a bit of work at the moment around our reporting framework, and I'll make the point that underneath this annual plan is a whole structure of different deliverables across the organisation that get reported on. So there's a whole framework associated with this sort of beneath the surface here. In terms of what the reporting will be, we're working on sort of a bit of a revamped version of that to come back to council, but essentially it'll track each of these initiatives, the progress that have been made under them, what the various initiatives are, because you'll note that the objectives have been listed up to more of a programmatic level rather than being more discrete projects this time around, to be able to give a broader view of activities across council. So we're looking at how we report that through, whether or not it's traffic lights or something different this time around, we'll work on that. But the intent is that it's meaningful and that people can really understand the activities that are happening within council and whether or not we're on track to deliver to the plan within the financial year.
Councillor Midgley.
Thank you. Thanks for the response. And, yeah, just advocate to the community, have a look at this annual plan, see the great work that council does and the breadth of responsibility that we carry. Thanks again to staff.
Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. I am very supportive of the action plan. I think it's a lot more detailed than anything I've seen before while I've been on council. I particularly like the council service catalogue, you know. So if you go to Big W, they have a catalogue of products that you can buy. Well, we've got this catalogue of services that your rates are providing you, and I think it's great that the community is made aware of this. It's very extensive, but it helps educate the community that we are not in charge of everything that happens in Kingborough. When something goes wrong, it's not always council's jurisdiction to fix it or deal with it. We are the closest level of government to the community, so they do often reach out to us when it's not our jurisdiction. And it would be very helpful for the community to read the page 11 onwards in the annual plan, which lists the extensive services that we provide. And if I'm assuming if it's not listed there, we don't provide it. So I do support that. I have made mention to the executive that I do think this action plan should have some dates and timelines. So I do support what the CEO said about re-looking at the reporting framework so that the community can get an update during the course of a year as to how we're tracking. I find that when we don't give the community timely information, they are within their rights to make it up themselves. And if they make it up themselves, they misinform themselves, they get upset over things that they probably don't need to. So I think it's important for us to give them the information and report more than annually. That's my so I do support that statement that you made earlier, CEO, about revamping that. Thank you very much. And congratulate the staff that put this together. It's a great read.
Thank you, Councillor Rantoli. Are there any further contributions? Councillor Bain.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. Firstly, as Councillor Midgley said, can I thank all the staff who have contributed to the plan, and particularly the staff who have pulled it all together. That's very well laid out and very easy to follow. Just wanted to highlight a couple of the many actions and initiatives that I'm really looking forward to occurring this financial year. The first one's under the priority growing together with well-planned spaces and infrastructure, and that's the undertake a review of statutory planning services to council and implement improvements. So this will include improving our development assessment processes to deliver a more timely, clear and consistent approach, and I think that's improvements which will benefit both our council staff and our community, so it's going to be a lot of people looking forward to that one. And then under the priority doing the essentials efficiently and effectively so we can build for the future, we've got developing and implementing a long-term financial plan to support council's financial sustainability. And that one's also linked to a couple of other initiatives, which is the strategic asset management plan and a future plan for the vacant lots at Kingston Park. So really important work which is all linked together. There's plenty of other actions and initiatives listed, but I'll leave others to speak and encourage residents to have a read.
Thank you, Councillor Bain. Are there any further contributions? There are no further contributions. Councillor Midgley, to sum up? No. The motion is as moved by Councillor Midgley and seconded by Councillor Cordova. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
To the contrary, no. That's carried unanimously. Moving to item 15.2, the Customer Service Charter, and the recommended motion on page 99. Do I have a mover for that motion, please? Moved, Councillor Cordova. Seconded, Councillor Midgley. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. This is reflects the proposed changes to the Customer Service Charter. A quick tour of them, I guess. Looking at 4.3 in the discussion on page 98, staff may be exposed to unreasonable customer behaviour while performing their duties, including aggression, threats and other inappropriate conduct. The provisions, this is 4.5, the provisions for managing unreasonable customer behaviour that have been included in the revised policy aim to uphold the rights of customers while protecting staff from harm, stress or undue pressure. And this will be communicated. It's available. It will, if passed tonight, be available for download from Council's website or for viewing at the Civic Centre in hard copy. I think the objectives are well thought out and reasonable, highlighting their 3.2 under the objectives, promote safe, respectful and constructive communication between customers and council employees, and uphold the rights of all customers where possible while protecting staff, as I've just explained, and then finally maintain transparency, accountability and consistency in how unreasonable customer behaviour is managed by council. So I think it makes sense to have a policy so that there can be consistency in the way that interactions between constituents and people interacting with council and the staff are managed. So I think it's a good policy to have, and it's well worth maintaining these types of policies and reviewing them on a regular basis to make sure that they fit within community expectations and within staff health and wellbeing expectations as well. Thanks.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. Are there any further contributions? Councillor Dean.
Just a question.
question. Thanks, Acting Mayor. Just to get a bit of a picture so people don't feel like this is an attack on our residents or right to, you know, be unhappy or question decisions. In terms of how or what maybe brought this about, would it be correct that we potentially have a smaller number of people that this may actually affect in terms of unreasonable behaviour or reasonable conduct behaviour that potentially utilise a disproportionate amount of council resources, or are we looking at this is actually going to affect a lot of our residents? Could you just give me a bit of a picture of who I suppose this is targeting?
Mr. Smith, sorry.
Thanks
for the question. It is very much the former. This is intended to address the unreasonable behaviour of a very, very small section of our community. And I'm talking a handful, but it is unfortunately necessary that we have a policy framework in terms of how we deal with that behaviour.
Councillor Dean. Thank you. Only just to say that I appreciate that those extra mechanisms put in place and that they've been inserted into the review. Thank you, Acting Mayor.
Thank you. Are there any further contributions? Councillor Antolli.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. I appreciate, so there obviously is a large insertion here around management of unreasonable customer behaviour. I think there's 98% of that that I'm totally in support of. I have some concerns around clause 5.7.2. So specifically 5.7.2 defines contacting elected members when you don't agree with the decision as forum shopping and therefore unreasonable behaviour. That's a very slippery slope in my view. I would say that notwithstanding the small minority of disgruntled individuals that Mr. Smead just mentioned, I would say that it is within every ratepayer's right, if they're not happy with the decision from council, to go to their elected representative and say, please help. I have been part of quite a number of reversal of council decisions via that method, and I would say that I couldn't support this concept that if you're not happy with a council decision and you do go to, if you're not happy with mum's decision, you go to dad, but that becomes an unreasonable behaviour. I just don't accept that, and I think that we probably, I would like to suggest that we remove from 5.7.2 and or elected members, because it is within the rights of each ratepayer for their elected members to represent them when those ratepayers feel aggrieved by a council decision. Could I have some input on that, please?
Well, I suppose the question is, do you have an amendment to move, or do you...
I'd like someone to address the concern and the thought around removing the restriction to go to your elected member and then be labelled as an unreasonable behaviour, the risk, according to this policy.
Yeah, I think that's the key point. It's the risk, not the intent. But I'll ask Mr. Stewart to respond, perhaps.
Yeah, thank you. And I think, like with anything, the context is key in these types of discussions. I will note the word excessive within the wording of 5.7.2, which is, an attempt to not diminish the rights of someone to go to an elected member to talk about a decision that's been made for council. But I think the intent of that clause is around the degree to which it happens. So if it came through independently through time from every single councillor and the matter had been dealt with a number of times already, that's the intent behind how this was intended to be drafted.
Councillor Antolli.
Thank you. So there's the intent and then there's the risk. There's the spirit of the law, then there's the letter of the law. There's the spirit of the policy and then there's the letter of the policy. The concern that has come to me, we've also received emails this afternoon from some very respected members of the community saying, look, we really have a problem with this. And the other question I had is, why are you shoving this through right before caretaker period. So if a person is a developer and is active in the community and actively is seeking council decisions on matters and is more than once being told no and more than once is going to a elected official saying help, is that excessive? So it's a bit broad and a bit vague. And I would hate to see a council officer activate the unreasonable demand, the unreasonable behaviour clause on them, and then services could be withdrawn to up to 12 months. How do we oppose that? Or how do we prevent that happening?
Mr. Stewart?
Yeah, thank you. I hope this answers your question, but in concert with this policy would be an internal procedure. So this would be a procedure that guides officer decision making that falls under the context of this policy. Within that decision making framework will be an escalation that requires a more senior officer to support that, and that would, it's a significant step at any stage to invoke the unreasonable customer behaviour clauses of this policy, and so I think there's additional context that would be required within any decision making that would be dealt with through that internal policy, internal procedure. I guess the other point that I would note is that a policy is in effect for council until it's no longer in effect for council. So council can at any stage make changes to policies as it sees fit, and if at a later stage council was concerned that the policy was no longer achieving the outcomes that it was intended to do, then it's completely within its right to make further changes to policy.
Councillor Antoli.
And I respect what you've said about the change of policy. As an elected member, I've got to vote for something, and I won't vote for it if I feel that there's something in there that's egregious and we can't get around it. Acting Mayor, I'd like to propose a small change to 5.7.2 and see if it meets with the approval of Council. I would like the term excessive contact or forum shopping. I think forum shopping is very pejorative, but anyway, we'll leave it in there. I would like to add it in there after forum shopping, excessive contact or forum shopping on a particular decision, so that it's actually looking at an individual on a decision who's frankly being a pest, right? But not a person that's constantly contacting council because they are in a role where they have to constantly interact with council. So that's my first change. And my concern is, where are we? My concern is around and or elected members to seek a different outcome. So
do you want to move them one at a time? Do you want to move them together?
I'm happy for your advice. I draw on your legal genius to help you with this.
Well, it's your amendment.
Well, I'm still asking for advice.
Well, I suppose it's a matter of whether you think one's more likely to pass than the other or whether they're both likely to pass. Or
I think...
Why don't you move them one at a time? I don't think they're going to take us very long.
All right. Can I just move that we change after forum shopping on a particular decision?
And so add the words on a particular decision after the words forum shopping?
Yep.
Do I have a move? Well, you can move that amendment. Is there a seconder for that amendment? Councillor Bain? Councillor Antoli, is there anything that you wish to add in relation to that amendment? No.
I think I've said
are there that. Any speakers on the amendment? Councillor Fox on the amendment? Oh, sorry. I've just done the same thing again. Councillor Cordova, Councillor Midgley, is the amendment satisfactory to you as mover and seconder? No. Okay, so we move to discussion on the amendment. Councillor Fox.
I guess I'm going back to item 4.6, where it is made clear that the definitions of reasonable customer behaviour and the procedures for dealing with the same have been developed in accordance with the guidelines provided by the Commonwealth Ombudsman. So I'd like to know whether The item particularly that Councillor Antoli is concerned about, whether there has been any input from the Commonwealth Ombudsman on that particular issue.
Sorry, is that a question to...
It's a question.
Yes.
To the staff more than anything, because they've provided this document for us.
Mr. Stewart?
I would need to look that up, but Ms. Shakuti might have more information.
Ms. Shakuti?
My understanding is that they are from the Ombudsman guidelines, those particular examples. That's where the wording has been extracted from, and it's the Tasmanian Ombudsman, but which I believe is then based on the Commonwealth Ombudsman. So no, hasn't been involvement from in this policy, but they have model guidelines that this has been based on, and that wording.
Yes. Councillor Fox.
I guess in my experience this has occurred, and I think some councillors may be aware of it, and I think the wording is very appropriate. I wouldn't support a change to this particular clause. I think it's important that we have got a barrier here that when we get excessive contact or forum shopping, I think it's important that we are protected from that, especially when the person is aggrieved. I think there are appropriate channels for them to deal with the situation, and it shouldn't be harassing basically the staff or the councillors. So I don't support the amendment. Thank you.
Are there any further speakers on the amendment? Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. I'll speak briefly to why I won't be supporting the amendment. To begin with, I support the recommendation of the staff, but also one can, if one so chooses, look at the Integrity Commission 3-year review, November 2014, the third submission to the Joint Standing Committee on Integrity, in which forum shopping is explained and detailed. Look, it's a standard term, and while one might semantically or subjectively attribute that to being a pejorative or not a pejorative, I just have to say that it is a it's a term that's used in a Integrity Commission submission to the Joint Standing Committee on Integrity, so I don't think it's way out of bounds or anything like that. I take the recommendation of the staff primarily. That's why I'm not going to support the amendment that's being recommended here, but also I think importantly what we would be doing if we were to adopt this this small amendment is essentially curtailing or constraining the intention of 5.7.2. One can easily imagine a circumstance in which there's somebody who's aggrieved about one thing that then takes it upon themselves to become aggrieved about another in a kind of cascading waterfall of grievance, which may result in either vexatious complaints or complaints which are disproportionately resource intensive for the council. So look, I think it just kind of paints us into a corner where the whole intention of this thing is to make sure where there are, on those very rare occasions, people who are disproportionately using council resources in a disproportionate and unreasonable way, there's some intervention that or some remedy that can be made. If we curtail or constrain or narrow the scope of this one particular clause, we're in fact narrowing the scope of the entire thing. Ipso facto, we're kind of watering it down or diluting its intent, which I don't support. So that's why I'll be voting against the amendment, and I'd encourage others to do the same.
Are there any further contributions? Councillor Dean.
Look, only just to say I think we're playing a little bit of semantics here. I don't think that adding that in is going to preclude the previous statement. I read that second part of that paragraph as being examples of behaviour that places unreasonable amount of resources. The bit is key for me is behaviour that results in resource equity issues that disrupt service delivery for the organisation. It may be on a singular issue, that's fine, but there's a whole bunch of other reasons there that would mean that could constitute a reasonable amount of resources. And I don't think adding those four words in would actually preclude what Councillor Cordova is suggesting. This would rule out council being able to determine what is unreasonable amount of resources. So I don't really think it's going to make much of a difference, and I will support it.
Thanks, Councillor Dean. I'm going to make a contribution straight after you because you've said exactly what I was going to say. I don't think that adding these words in to clarify, because I think all it does is clarify the meaning of forum shopping. Forum shopping, by definition, is shopping around on a particular issue to try and elicit a different outcome. It's not the type of behaviour that Councillor Cordova described, which I think would be covered by the first sentence in any event. So I'm happy to support the amendment. Are there any further contributions on the amendment? Yes, I am. Are there any further contributions on the amendment? If not, I'll ask Councillor Antoli if he wishes to sum up. No. So I'll put the amendment moved by Councillor Antoli and seconded by Councillor Bain to add the words on a particular decision after the words forum shopping in clause 5.7.2. All those in favour, please say aye. Aye. To the contrary, no. A show of hands is required. All those in favour, please raise your hand. Is Councillors Antoli, Dean, Bain, Midgley and Street, and those against, Councillors Fox and Cordova. The amendment is carried. Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. Thank you, colleagues, for your support. Can I ask some more questions? 5.8. So who may impose a restriction under clause 5.8 and at what level of authority? How does it work?
Mr. Stewart, or Mr. Who's going to?
I can answer.
Mr. Stewart.
Yeah, thanks for the question. So I guess that's where those internal procedures come in that I referenced earlier. So depending on the type of decision being made, it would require a different level of seniority. So I don't have that procedure in front of me at the moment. But I guess what I'm saying is where there are more significant decisions to be made under that framework, it would require more seniority in the organisation.
Councillor Antoli.
And is the resident given any notice or an opportunity to respond before it takes effect?
Mr. Stewart.
Thank you. I will note, and I'm just trying to find the clause, there is a clause somewhere within this proposed wording around the policy that that says in the first instance, if the behaviour relates to a matter outlined within the section of the policy, then the first option may be first step may be in request to cease behaviour. Yeah, so 5.8.1, the language is the first step is to ask them to cease the behaviour in question. So it gives some opportunity for that to be addressed before we move into more significant layers of management.
They said, you're given a slap on the wrist, stop it or we'll do this. Okay, that's fair enough, thank you. I think you touched on my next question. You may have touched on this, CEO. It's clause 5.8.6 because it permits terminating provision of services altogether. And a clause later on, 5.10.1, reviews restrictions only every 12 months. Should the most severe options require CEO authorisation, and should a shorter review period probably be considered? Because you are terminating services altogether to a person who's actually duly paying their rates. So is that clear?
Yeah, Mr. Stewart.
Yeah, thank you. Yes, I would suggest in that context that would come to me for a decision around terminating someone's right to face-to-face or telephone communications. What I would say is there are services we will still provide to that individual. So, you know, that doesn't stop their right to, you know, travel on council roads or go to the park or rubbish collection or any of those sort of things. Really, this is a clause about how we keep staff safe in this context, and that's avoiding confrontation, phone calls that can be quite heated at times and quite dangerous place for our staff to be in. So the resident in that context would still be able to access the majority of council services.
Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. I totally support that, totally support the council staff. And I understand the distinction you're making about restriction of face-to-face service. Yeah, so it's like going into the sin bin in a certain sense. Just quickly, sorry. If I may, I might have one or two questions. I just need to find my notes. If I can hand over to maybe someone else, give someone else a chance.
Was there still a further amendment under consideration?
No, I'm satisfied with the way we've done this so far. Because we are making it very clear it's about excessive... it's basically bullying on a topic. I get that. Yeah, so I'm satisfied now.
Any further contributions? If there aren't any further contributions... and I'm slowing my voice down to allow you to catch your notes back up.
Gracious. I think I have no more burning plates.
Okay, all right. That being the case, I'm going to ask if Councillor Cordova would like to sum up.
No, I don't.
Good. The motion is the amended motion, which was originally moved by Councillor Cordova and seconded by Councillor Midgley. It is as printed on page 99, on page 99 of the agenda and amended during the course of the debate. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
To the contrary, no. That is carried unanimously. Moving to item 15.3, the social media policy and the recommended motion on page 120. Do I have a mover for the recommended motion? Councillor Cordova moves, seconded Councillor Midgley. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. So the purpose of this report is to introduce a social media policy both for councillors and for staff, which provides a consistent, professional and informed approach to online engagement. Another whirlwind tour of this one. And bearing in mind that all of these policies that we talk about at Council do get reviewed on a periodic basis, I'll just draw our attention to 4.3. It applies to all social media activity by employees and councillors, whether undertaken during work or personal time, and regardless of whether council-owned or personal devices are used. 4.4, it covers official council social media accounts, including posting, commenting and account management activities. 4.5, it establishes a consistent approach for employees and councillors, and so it goes. 4.6, social media expectations within this policy are aligned with statutory duties under the Local Government Act 1993, reinforcing governance standards and the Councillor Code of Conduct. Where the rubber hits the road for this particular policy is outlined in section 8 there about risk, the significant risks that councillors are exposed to and that councillors' employees are exposed to, and that implementing this policy provides guidelines for both employees and councillors to reduce those risks associated with whether it's reputational damage, confidentiality breaches, legal exposure, operational disruption, while promoting a consistent and responsible communication that strengthens community trust. Recently, I've undertaken Australian Institute of Company Director training, and one of the first things that they'll tell you is that culture starts at the top. And I was privileged to receive the 2025 Tasmanian Emerging Director of the Year award from the AICD, and they explain in corporate Australia as well as in the public service how important culture is. And I think that this particular policy is about culture. We've often heard that expression, the fish rots from the head. We are supposed to set an example as councillors and in our workplace. We're supposed to set an example for other people to follow, and therefore it serves the whole community well when we try our best to maintain standards of behaviour that fit within community expectations. So I don't think it's too much to expect, just like in any other workplace where people would try to avail themselves in a professional way. I don't think that it's too much to expect councillors to do the same. And therefore, I think that this is a reasonable and a measured step in the right direction to help keep not just the council staff and councillors safe, not just to keep the level of discourse measured and have robust discussion where people can disagree in vehement and passionate ways, but they do so in a way that is professional, is reasonable, is humble, and it actually allows for a greater quality of debate rather than the kind of unfortunate mudslinging or... it's all the things that people are upset about when it comes to Western democracies, dissolving into a into a kind of a fit of mudslinging, we can do better. And I think the responsibility for those of us to do better actually starts with those who are leading those organisations. So that's why I actually think it's a good thing. I don't think it curtails free speech in any kind of unreasonable way. As I say, it's going to be a social media policy that will be reviewed next in August of 2028 if it's approved tonight. And so I highly commend it to my colleagues and I hope we support it. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. Are there any further speakers? Councillor Midgley.
Thanks, Acting Mayor. Thanks, Councillor Cordova. Great summary there of why this policy is so important. Again, I'd really like to acknowledge the work of staff for this because they do all the background work to bring this policy and our reports to Council. And we had a Councillor workshop on this a couple of months ago and we heard from the author of the report how they had read other Council policies regarding this, had a chat with our leading local government association in Tasmania to ensure all things were correct and also looked at legislation. So it has covered a lot of bases. And like it or love it, social media is with us. It is here to stay and is way more people are communicating and jumping on. And there's good things about it and there's sometimes some bad things about it. So we really needed to include staff and councillors in this policy. So it's really important that we have a holistic view of this because we do need to recognise that the impact of some things that are shared on social media that they can have. And we know there's new legislation around the psychosafety and wellbeing and impact that it has on our staff members who are the forefront of our workplace. And so we need to have that responsibility to address, you know, harassment, threats and any personal targeting. So it really covers it in this area. And I feel like the policy gets the balance right. It protects staff while still allowing councillors to speak openly. As Councillor Cordova said, we can have these robust conversations and represent our community, but we do have some guidelines in place now around that, and I think that's really important. I thought also the policy highlighted some really important notes as well around confidentiality, privacy, respectful communication, and really that foundation of integrity, that fundamental values that our previous mayor stated when she left council about being kind. I think that's the foundation of this policy as well. But it also looks to the AI. We need to, the policy is quite current in regards to that and emergency communication, and it provides a great framework and also the noting that it recommends the training for councillors and staff as well. So I guess I'm sure that will be a great onboarding for our new councillors when they hit the ground running at the end of the year, understanding all these policies and the impacts that social media can have and just being mindful. So, yeah, well done. It's a great champion thing to put forward.
Thank you, Councillor Midgley. Are there any further contributions? Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. So we have shared this policy in a previous workshop. I shared in that workshop and with all councillors some advice that we got from the Office of Local Government on this. And the Office of Local Government advised in June that there is no power under the Local Government Act enabling the CEO or any council officer to direct councillors on matters to do with their social media page, that they have no authority over the personal use of their own devices, and the CEO has no authority to tell a councillor to remove something from a private group that they may have talked about. So how do we then square the authority clause in 6.1.7 with that advice that I've already shared to the leadership of council and to my peers? 6.1.7. Because it says it requires a councillor to comply with the CEO direction. I see a clash in this.
Mr. Stewart.
Yeah, thank you. So I guess there's a bit of context here about what a policy is. So a policy is a governance document adopted by council to create direction, guidance and expectations in areas where legislation might be broad, it might be silent, and it might require context to be provided to council. So it's an organisation adopted framework, not a legislative power. So there's a difference in the response that was provided by the local the Office of Local Government around what the legislative powers are versus something that council might choose to adopt as a policy to have an expectation of standards and ways of complying to council policy. The other thing I will note is that the Office of Local Government was responding under the powers of the Local Government Act, but there are other legislative drivers, such as the Work Health and Safety Act of 2012, that do provide the CEO some powers under this context.
Councillor Antolli.
Thank you very much for the response. I suppose my problem is that you've got two worlds colliding here. You have the staff world, and they report to the CEO, and you have the councillor world, and they actually report to the Office of Local Government. And the problem I have is that we have a policy that is, in my view, attempting to rule over the two worlds, and I have a problem with that. I have no problems with any of the safety provisions talked about naming of staff and work health and safety and psychosocial, none of those things. I do have issues where we... if we vote for this, we are enjoining on a potentially ignorant new council cohort in a few months a policy which, quite frankly, makes claims of authority over councillors which it doesn't have. And my concern is that it's blended together. My view is that they should be two separate policies if you're going to have it. And I don't think that it's well thought out over the both classes or the two worlds. And so while I don't have any issues with 98% of the policy and certainly don't want in my working life to contravene any of those work health and safety issues or the naming of staff, I've named a staff member once and that was to praise the person. I got his permission and I had 35,000 views on that particular post. That's the only time I feel like I would like to name a staff member with their permission for praise. And I hope that, you know, I hope council wouldn't have wrapped me on the knuckles on that. So I'm struggling with the fact that there's a whole range of issues I have that are to do with the blending of those two worlds, not any of the work health and safety issues. Is there a way that we can have this policy reviewed and brought back to us in a separate format so that we don't have the two worlds blended together? Because the Office of Local Government has made it really clear, while, yes, Legat has some templates out there, it is problematic to put one policy over the two because councillors are not staff.
Mr. Stewart?
Certainly, it's within council's powers to choose not to adopt this policy and request that the policy comes back in two parts. That's certainly something that's within your rights to be able to do. As you rightfully pointed out, I will note that the Local Government Association of Tasmania's model policy in this area does combine both elected members and council staff into the same policy template there that was used to help inform the development of the draft policy that you see in front of you tonight. But it's, I guess, a decision for council to make whether or not you wish to proceed or whether you want to go a different path.
Councillor Antolli, anything further?
I'd like to test the room and put an amendment forward that we actually have this deferred under the new council and that it be separated out, that there'd be a behaviour policy for councillors and a policy for staff.
So is that a motion that the matter be deferred?
Yes.
Being a procedural motion, there's no debate. Is there a seconder for the motion that the matter be deferred? Your motion for deferral fails for want of a seconder, Councillor Antolli.
So because I have a problem with that and nothing else, and I hope you understand and can hear what I'm saying in context, I certainly do not want to go, I do not want to be given permission to go off rogue and do any of these things. I think that there's an issue, a governance issue for me as a person who's been CEO three or four times. You just can't have the same social media policy over the board of directors as you do over the staff. It doesn't work that way. So I won't be voting in favour of the policy.
Are there any further contributions? Councillor Dean.
Thanks, Acting Mayor. Just a very brief one from me. I respect Councillor Antolli's view and recognise that it can be brought forward if those issues do arise, currently not convinced that the risk of those issues arising warrant deferring this. And the key thing out of this policy for me is 5.6 of the policy, which states nothing in this policy prevents councillors from scrutinising council performance, advocating for constituents, expressing disagreement with council decisions or participating in public debate. Councillors are elected representatives and may comment on council decisions, processes, services and performance. However, councillors are expected to do so in a way that is lawful, accurate, respectful and consistent with the councillor code of conduct. Public comment should be directed at council decisions, processes, services or performances rather than personally targeting individual council employees. So that is the crux of it for me. I think given the timing we are at with an election coming up, it might be easy to score a few points in terms of, you know, throwing some mud at council. And so given that we're just about to head into caretaker mode, I think it's timely that we adopt this, that we lead from the front, as Councillor Cordova has suggested, and that we adopt this policy moving forward. And I'm very, very comfortable in my own activity that I will hope to not contravene this policy, but I also respect that there may be times where someone, a new councillor or whoever, or staff member, that inadvertently does breach this, and it does give the option for the CEO to speak with them about it, and I'm sure in those situations that person may choose to retract it. How that plays out if the person doesn't choose to retract it, that is a conversation for another day, but at this point I think it's important that we set the parameters and lead from the front and make sure that we do the best thing by our employees.
Thank you, Councillor Dean. Are there any further contributions? Councillor Bain.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. Just to briefly follow on what Councillor Dean's just said, I guess my take on it is it's all common courtesy, essentially, this policy, and there needs to be someone who's got the ability to say to a councillor, that's out of line, can you amend it, can you change it, can you get rid of it? And as far as this organisation goes, we've got a CEO who we've put faith in to run the organisation. So if we can't go to that person, then I guess who can we go to? So, and my take on this is that would only be done in extreme circumstances where CEO's got some certain evidence that we've gone against a policy, we've gone against legislation, we've gone against something to bring that course of action in place. So for those reasons, I'm happy to support the policy as is.
Thank you, Councillor Bain. Are there any further contributions? I'm going to make a short contribution. I respect Councillor Antoli's position, but I do disagree. I'm of the view that the obligations on councillors and staff are sufficiently delineated within the policy, but having them combined in one social media policy for the purposes of efficiency and ease of access to that policy is appropriate. I do thank you, Councillor Antoli, for indicating, notwithstanding that objection, that you don't have an issue with the substance of the policy. I think this is the adoption of this policy is a timely and important step. I want to be really clear that I have no problem with anybody criticising decisions of this council or criticising me for things that I do as councillor or acting mayor or throwing mud if that mud sticks and is warranted. But I think that there are ways to do that without that being overtly personal or disparaging, bullying, harassing, defamatory, discriminatory or intentionally disparaging. And that's what this policy is about. It's about the way that we conduct that criticism and the way that we approach each other and the community and how we deal with these matters. That's the reason why I'm wholly supportive of the policy. I think it provides a transparent and professional approach to these issues, which, frankly, we haven't had on a consistent basis to date, and I think it's important that we do have an approach that's consistent on these matters and aligns with our other statutory duties and the other statutory duties of our CEO as a responsible officer. I think it promotes a safe and respectful form of online engagement, which is really important. And I don't think limits the way in which we conduct debate in this community or communicate with constituents at all. It just sets a standard that by and large we already meet. And I think that's why this policy is so important and should be supported, and I will be supporting it. Are there any further speakers? No, Councillor Cordova to sum up.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. I think this has been a really respectful debate, and there have been two... I want to echo the Acting Mayor's sentiment that this is a timely and important step and not intended to dissuade criticism or dissent against, council decisions. But what really resonated with me was the contribution by Councillor Bain regarding common courtesy, respectful dialogue. We wouldn't need this policy to affect councillors if councillors didn't conduct themselves poorly on social media sometimes. But the thing I want to reflect on is that councillors are not above staff or some special breed that deserves some special set of different rules. If you wouldn't do it in your workplace, don't do it on the campaign trail. We have to be modelling good behaviour because culture starts at the top. And if we want to be at the top of a wonderful organisation like this, we have to model and normalise professional, respectful, dignified behaviour. So it's not that hard to not contravene this policy if it passes tonight. I think it's pretty straightforward. Just use common courtesy, use some common decency and some respect. So I don't think we councillors should be feeling threatened by this policy. If we intend to communicate in public in good faith, then we shouldn't be alarmed by being held to a set of standards and a set of account, just like staff at any other workplace would be. It's not hard to not contravene this policy. So finally, I'll just say that the board of directors of an organisation should be trying their best to build up the organisation that has entrusted them in a leadership position. And where there are issues to address for improvement of that organisation, the board of directors should try to address those issues for improvement with dignity, with respect, with kindness, and with integrity. They should be leading by building and normalising respectful communications. They shouldn't be leading by trying to tear down the very organisation that they were elected to represent. I think this is a straightforward policy approach that normalises decency, and kindness, and I think we can set the standard. We can't make everybody follow it, but we can certainly set standards for this workplace, for this organisation, and for our colleagues. Thanks very much.
The motion is as moved by Councillor Cordova and seconded by Councillor Midgley. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
To the contrary, no.
No.
A show of hands is required. All those in favour, please raise your hand. Councillor Fox, Cordova, Dean, Bain, Midgley and Street, and those against, Councillor Antoli. The motion is carried. Moving on to page 130 and item 15.4, the public art guidelines and the recommended motion on page 132. Do I have a mover of the recommended motion? Councillor Midgley moved, seconded Councillor Cordova. Any time any of the rest of you want to jump in, that would be awesome. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you. Well, I've only got a few more meetings left, so I'm happy to put my hand up. But yes, seriously, on this one, the public art guidelines, I am a really big supporter of public art and, grateful to have been at a few launches over our municipality during my terms on council. We all know that public art adds a lot to Kingborough. It makes our public spaces more interesting, creates a sense of place and give our local artists an opportunity to share their work as well. We know that with the recent addition of the murals, so many people have commented to me just how wonderful they are. So thanks so much for our team doing that. And that's all part of our arts and sculpture trail as well. And I really hope that future councils continue to fund and support these initiatives. But what this one's about is we're moving from a formal policy to a guideline, and I think it gives a lot more flexibility. It makes it easier for artists, businesses, developers and community groups to understand how they can get involved. It also retains things in the guidelines around quality, maintenance, accessibility and cultural considerations, and also includes opportunities for access and all abilities and our First Nations Aboriginal inclusion of public art as well. That's really all I kind of had to say around that one, but it does, there are lots of opportunities in our developments and parks and public spaces, and it's a positive step for Kingborough, really. My question around this one is, given their guidelines rather than sort of enforceable requirements, I'm wondering when we have new developments or upgrades to areas in the community, the Main Street, Kingston, or different parks that we're doing, how will developers and in that sort of planning, are there any opportunities to look at this sort of more proactively, and does these guidelines sort of strengthen that as well?
Yes, Shukuti.
Thank you. So previously the policy didn't apply to developers and it wasn't all private or third party third parties installing public art. They were simply, again, could be referred to. It was for council installations and acquisitions. So the whole reason why, well, two reasons why we thought guidelines would be better would be, one, we just didn't feel it was necessary to be in a policy, and reducing some of our documentation in that space and administration. But we also thought that guidelines published on our website that then could be provided in a more accessible way would actually encourage developers and third parties to reference and use them. And we will have, I suppose, some contact details, etc., about, you know, thinking about installing art, contact our arts officer, and, you know, can provide more tailored advice. It's also something we can use reference, of course, not in permit conditions or anything like that, but we could include in our letter, you know, if you were to be installing art, here's council's guidelines and support for doing this, which we could do proactively through, for example, the planning process for relevant developments.
That's great. Thank you very much. I've seen some great examples from other councils that have these guidelines and the inclusion of more public art. So, yeah, thanks for that refresh.
Are there any further contributions? Councillor Fox.
On 4.8, it mentions that procedures relating to the maintenance, selection, approval, records and installation of council-owned public artworks will be retained as internal operational procedures managed by the community services and hub team. When I read this document, I thought, wouldn't it be good if there was a list of artworks and a record for the community to be aware of, so that they could either visit them or know that they're available if they want to purchase or use them, and also to know how much money is being spent or how much they have cost. And I was wondering whether something like that could be publicly available and on record to sort of not only celebrate what we have, but also to give more access to the community.
Ms. Shukuti.
So firstly, I'd probably point out that the sculpture trail and the material that we publish for the sculpture trail includes most of the public art that we have acquired. Of course, any new public art would not be included in that until we update that trail. So there's certainly information around what is around our municipality, who the artists are, how you can access it and enjoy it. But there's not a specific, for example, register. That is something we could think about, and I'd have to discuss with staff around putting that together and the value of publishing that.
Councillor Fox.
Yeah, I think that would be good, because not a lot of art, for example, in the council chambers is not being part of the sculpture trail, and one wonders whether it's going to be there forever or whether it's going to be moved on or not. And whether it's available for use in other areas around council. So, I'd appreciate perhaps getting an idea of whether it can be done as a record, just to, over the many times I've been aware of these acquisitions and wondered where they are or what's happened to them. So that would be great. Thank you.
there any further contributions? Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. Fully in support of the policy. There are some errors or typos that I think is probably worth bringing to the attention because of the minutes. So this is incorrectly listed as item 14.4. It should be 15.4. And I'll leave that to the office just to fix. Clause 4.4 lists a whole bunch of... lists three different attachments, but they've got the attachments end up in the wrong order, so I'll let them deal with that. I think the first attachment is meant to be a marked up copy, but it actually ends up being the actual existing policy. And Appendix C, which is in our appendices, notes that this particular policy that we're approving today is in the carry forward for September. So my question around that is, did we bring this forward because it's a caretaker decision that we can't make in September?
Well, we can't make policy decisions during caretaker, but I'll leave it for Ms. Shakuti to...
I think it's a year out of date.
The policy will be...
Yes.
Carry forward.
Oh, I'm not sure what's happened with the carry
Look
forward.
At the forward agenda, which is in the appendices. It mentions that the public art and art collection policy will come before council in September.
I think Mr. Stewart has the answer, Councillor.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you. So this policy or change of policy to guidelines has been intended to come for a couple of months now. I think when we last updated the forward agenda of when policies would be considered, we potentially put it in the wrong month, and then we managed to get the work done to be able to put it on the agenda this time around. So I wouldn't read too much into that, and take the paper as read, noting the other corrections you've made.
You just, because I know it affects the minutes. Okay, thank you. That's all from me.
Thank you. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. I'll be very brief, but just to say I think this is a really positive step forward, and it's really nice that Council is highlighting the role that public art does play. It's interesting that not only does it play a role in just making our lives that little bit more bright as we're going about our daily business, but it also serves a really important purpose in the prevention of graffiti and where it's developed in conjunction with a whole bunch of cohorts that really benefit from having that time spent together and learning new skills. And one of the examples that's used here in the discussion is the active involvement of local young people. I mean, it's a terrific opportunity to get out and about, to feel embedded in place and really identify strongly with your community and feel like you're at home. Across a whole range of cohorts, it's really important and really exciting. So I just wanted to, I guess, celebrate the work that Council does in this space and celebrate the staff who are so dedicated and passionate to brightening up our lives through public art. And also to all those people who get involved, and there's been some wonderful stories on Council's Facebook page and social media, Instagram, showing some of the amazing public art that takes place here. So I did want to highlight that. And also just, I think, worth noting is the deaccession policy that is forms part of this. I shouldn't say policy, but the deaccession principles that form part of these guidelines. And then I just wanted to finish by highlighting that there at the bottom of page 140, if you're interested in installing public art, please contact the council. Contact the Arts and Events Officer at artsinfo@kingborough.tas.gov.au or contact the council, because I, for one, would love to see much more public art throughout our spaces and places. So thanks again.
Are there any further contributions? If there are no further contributions, Councillor Midgley, to sum up.
Thanks, Acting Mayor. Just a little infomercial from me as well. The Council website, you can look at art and sculpture, and I just have a little browse there, and there is just a great reminder of the fantastic public art we have across our municipality. So get on there and have a look, and I really hope that Councils to come strongly consider this and implement this in our budget to ensure that we have public art for the future.
Thanks, Councillor Midgley. The motion is as moved by Councillor Midgley and seconded by Councillor Cordova. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
To the contrary, no. That is carried unanimously. And moving to page 141 and item 15.5, Pearson's Point Observation Fort, and the recommended motion on page 143. Do I have a mover for that motion? Councillor Cordova moves. Councillor Fox seconds. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you very much, Acting Mayor. I'll take it as read. I think that this particular... So that the technical reports are in there, and I thought they were really interesting reading. The structural... basically, I think that this kind of middle ground approach where we do some minor intervention on the structure is really important. I think it's the right kind of watch and act position to take rather than entering into some major works which firstly would be more costly but may still result in structural movement. And then, of course, the issue of if one were to remove the trees, which was not the recommendation, then there would still be, as tree roots decay and move, there would still, and soil dryness increases, there may still be structural movement there anyway. So I just thought that of all the options presented by the suitably qualified professionals here, that this recommendation that's before us to approve an allocation of $10,000 to undertake minor repairs to the structure, including the installation of structural support columns and notes ongoing monitoring, I think that is, in fact, the right approach. It's kind of a halfway point between two, but it comes on professional or suitably qualified professional advice. So I support and commend the Council's efforts to do both here, protect the significant heritage, but also to protect the native vegetation that's there as well. Thank you.
Councillor Ann Tolby.
Thank you. Again, support. Some questions on the subject of finance, if I may. So 5.1 talks about putting aside $10,000 for repairs, and I think we make a note of that in 10B, which is the recommendation, approves an allocation of $10,000 to undertake minor repairs. I'm assuming that's coming out of this current budget. Is that correct?
Mr. Smee?
Correct.
Yep. So that's the authorisation. And Council do that. What is the plan for the other costs that are listed in the finance area which are not part of the recommendation?
Mr. Smee?
So for this financial year, it's only proposed to spend the $10,000. The other costs would form part of future budget decisions.
Councillor Antolli.
Is Council Officer's plan to put this automatically into the budget decisions for the next financial year? Or should that, or do we just leave it hanging, given that we've put this out there to the community? And they'd like to probably see some action either way or a decision made either way.
Mr. Smee?
The plan is to do the work to make the structure safe. The additional work that has been highlighted would form part of an officer recommendation in the future as part of that monitoring of the condition of the structure.
Councillor Antolli.
Thank you. So basically, with those other finance issues, it's more for noting that if we have to tackle those areas, that's the cost. But I do note that you've mentioned here 10C, ongoing monitoring of the condition, further recommendations. Okay, so that's probably the gateway or the pathway into it, coming back to us later. Okay, I'm happy to support. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any further contributions? Councillor Bain.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. Just a quick follow-up question on that one. With the 10C recommendation, the ongoing monitoring, is that something that's done internally, and is there any costs associated with that that aren't already within the budget?
Mr. Smith.
The intent is it would be done internally, but acknowledging that this is an area that does require specific advice at times, so... And I guess the high-level monitoring would be done by staff, and if there's an observable need to get some specific expertise, that would be an extra cost. But certainly the intent of the ongoing monitoring that's recommended in the first instance would be done by staff.
Councillor Bain. Are there any further contributions? Councillor Fox.
Knowing the heritage of this particular site and other sites in Kingborough, is there a government body or a military body that would have some interest in preserving this type of structure, and would they be prepared to contribute to the maintenance and monitoring that we're aware of?
Mr. Smee.
The TAS Heritage Council do provide grant funding from time to time, but certainly they don't have funding available on an everyday basis to support the... there are numerous heritage structures throughout Tasmania, and the majority of the work required to maintain them falls back on the property owner, which in this case is council.
Councillor Fox.
Support the motion. Thank you.
Are there any further contributions? Look, for my own contribution, this seems to be a very sensible compromise between the two competing objectives, and I support it. Councillor Court, over to sum up.
Thank you very much. A good discussion and a worthy cause. I didn't mention in my speech, there's no time for it now either, but I encourage people to go and look at the history of this particular structure and the heritage that it relates to. Absolutely fascinating and an important thing to reflect on. And in doing my deep dive for this particular one, I found out about the early March 1942 Japanese submarine launching a float plane that flew reconnaissance over the River Derwent and Hobart. And this particular structure was set up in order to kind of monitor and defend against events like that. So the actual World War II history is just really important to know about. And so I encourage residents to look into it. It's pretty interesting. Thanks.
The motion is as moved by Councillor Cordova and seconded by Councillor Fox. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
To the contrary, no. That motion is carried unanimously. Moving on to page 175, an item 15.6, the appendices. The recommended motion is on page 175. Can I please have a mover for that motion? Please. Moved Councillor Fox, seconded Councillor Dean. Councillor Fox.
This is for the appendices, isn't it? Yes. There's not really very much information in this other than the acting mayor's activities, and I have got no questions on that. Thank you.
Any further contributions, questions? Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, acting mayor. Just on the acting mayor's activities.
Yes.
I'm interested to know, 15th of June, with our new curbside collection truck fleet, just wondering if there's an update around artwork on the side of the truck fleet. Does that artwork kind of get updated? We recently ran this amazing competition with students and things like that. Is there any information about garbage truck fleet artwork?
Mr.
Finger painting.
Like recycling messages and things like that.
You know what? You're not going to get a better answer than one from me. So I'm going to answer it. Oh, Sam, our communications lead, Ms. Adams.
Yes, sorry. I was just going to say, the two trucks that had their art updated, they were the public litter bins, so they were different trucks, and the rest have recycling, keep recycling out of plastic bags, et cetera. So we have rolled them out, so when the new trucks come on board, we update them, so yeah, but we haven't had any. Recently.
Right. Different trucks.
Yeah.
Are there any further contributions or questions? Councillor Bain.
Thank you, Mayor. Just in relation to, there's a radio interview on the 4th of August, and it mentions there about public access to the Jack Jumper High Performance Centre.
Yes.
There's been a bit of misinformation out there about no one else is using the High Performance Centre. Can we just clear that up, that there is maybe some community clubs using it?
Sure, and I think it's vital that we're really clear about this. So whilst I would answer the question under ordinary circumstances, I think it's probably appropriate for Mr. Stewart, who conducted the discussions with the Jack Jumpers, to answer that question.
Yeah, thanks for the question. So we've already had the Kings in there using the facility already, which is great to have them in using the new facility. I guess the community use of the Jack Jumpers High Performance Centre is for basketball, and it is for sort of club use and that sort of development pathway type use. So there is community use, but it's not, you know, myself and the mayor going up to throw hoops. It's specifically for basketball use rather than sort of casual. I guess what I would say is that it does provide some opportunities to offset utilisation within the Kingborough Sports Centre with those users going into the Jack Jumper Centre, and creates more capacity within the council facility for that more casual or ad hoc use or use by other codes.
I want to be clear, I wouldn't desecrate that facility by making any attempt at utilising it. Are there any further contributions or questions? No.
That being the case, I'll put the motion that the appendices attached to the agenda be received and noted. All those in favour, please say aye. To the contrary, no. That's carried unanimously. Moving to page 175, notices of motion and item 16.1. We do have a notice of motion submitted by Councillor Cordova, headed Bruny Island Protections and an Officer's Response from the CEO. Councillor Cordova, do you move that motion?
No.
Councillor Cordova not seeking to move that motion in accordance with the meeting procedures. That motion is withdrawn, effectively. Thank you, Councillor Antoli. Moving to page 177 and item 17, confirmation of items to be dealt with in closed session. Can I have a mover, please, that in accordance with the Local Government Meeting Procedures Regulations 2025, Council by absolute majority move into closed session to consider the following items: confirmation of minutes and applications for leave of absence. Moved, Councillor Midgley, seconded, Councillor Fox. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
To the contrary, no. That motion is carried unanimously. In accordance with the Council Meetings and Councillor Workshops Audio Recording Guidelines Policy, recording of the open session of the meeting will now cease, and the open session of Council adjourns at 7:15pm. Thank you all very much for your attendance in the public gallery, and thank you for those who've tuned in online. Good night.